are holding on Kuf Tes Amud Aleph, two lines from the bottom. We're talking about the Anshei Sodom and the corruptness that they did as far as sort of preventing guests from coming through, preventing guests or wayfarers, whatever, from coming through, and what they did to people. We started talking about what they did to people, the unjust things, and now we're going to continue with it. Amri, they used to say as far as one of the laws of Sodom was, if they had Torah, somebody who has one ox, Mari Chad Yoma, he is responsible for pasturing all the oxen of the people in town for one day, or a week, or a month, or whatever, a year, or what have you, however often. Gilesley, if somebody does not have any oxen, then he has to guard everybody else's oxen for 2 days. So in other words, the idea of it was to a person, has left, he has no oxen, they'd make him do more work than if he had any.
And the reason being?
Well, the reason being because they need people, because they were cruel people, and they were being cruel against the people that have no money or no possessions or whatever. This is Anshei Sodom we're talking about. But with that said, I mean, Marsha and Yad Ramah talk about a Kruma Svara that they might have used. That they might have used for it. For example, there's the idea if a person has if a person has no oxen, but he has fields, then he's more responsible for taking care of everybody else's oxen to make sure that they don't damage his own fields. There's a concept in halacha called alam nizik, at least as an opinion, that says alam nizik lahalchak atasmo, that the nizik is responsible for making sure that he doesn't become a nizik. But obviously they took it to extremes. Then they took that basic idea and took it to extremes and made an unjust law out of it. And the Yad Ramah has another svara that their theory behind this, at least what they use to justify it, what they use to rationalize it, is if a person has no animals, well then he doesn't have animals to take care of, so therefore he can be taking care of everybody else's animals more. Whereas opposed to the truth is the other way around. If you have an animal, it's much easier to take care of a bunch of other animals. Once you have one already, like this, you have to take off from whatever other work you're doing. So this is an example. The point is, we're going to see throughout the thing that they tried to at least rationalize. They try to make it look like at least they're acting legally, but really they're twisting it into something completely immoral. Yeah. Well, something completely immoral. Something to basically privilege the haves over the have-nots, basically. Okay. So, Hahu Yasna Bar Al Malta, so there was a certain Yasin, the son of an Almana, Hovele Torah Lemire, so one time they gave him the oxen to guard. Also, Shaklinu Vakatlinu, he went and took the oxen and shechted them. He took them and shechted them and killed them. Amalu, and then he announces to the people, the Israel, anybody who until now owned one ox, Nishko Chad Mashcha, should get one skin of the, from dead animals. The left leg Torah, anybody who had no animals up until this point, Nishkot Trey Mashki, should get two skins. Amrele Mai Hai, so they tell them what kind of skin they have with the object. Amrele, he says to them, Sof Dina Ketzilas Dina. Well, the end of the thing should be like the beginning. Ma Tchilas Dina, just like at the beginning, you're claiming that the rule should be as far as pasturing the animals, that the East leg Torah Mari Chadya, if you have one ox and you watch them for one day, the left leg Torah Mari Trey, and then if you have no ox and you have to guard everybody else's double as much, 2 days, well then by the same logic. Well then the same thing by the end of it, when the animals have been shechted. So somebody who had one ox should get one skin. The less they turn the shkot today. Somebody who had no oxen up until this point should be able to get two. In other words, he turned their logic against them. Another example of one of their unjust laws. Their rule was the other the Mabra Nesef Chadzuza. Whoever crosses the river on a ferry would pay one zuz. Okay, the law of the Mabra. But if somebody does not cross using the ferry, he comes on a different road. Nesef Trey. They would make him pay two zuz. Again, their excuse could be that he's evading the toll or whatever. But the truth is, they were doing it in order to harass travelers. Another example, the Havalai Dora de Lizni, if a person put out a row of bricks, also called Havachad, Shakwachada, every person would come from the city, every person would come and take one brick on the lay, and he'd say, oh, well, I know how did the Shakli, well, I only took one, surely you're not going to hold it against me that I took one, right? By the time the point is, he has no brick left. Yeah. Just like we said the other day, the Medrash says a similar thing about the Dora Mabul, same idea, you're less than a shovel cripple. Similarly, to have a shabbi kumei a shanti, if somebody put out garlic or onions to dry out, Same thing. Same idea. Each person in town will come and take one. Normally, I'm not part of the shackley. Yeah, but I only took one. Can't really see. It's not even proper for Shabbos Kota. It's not even collectible and based in, et cetera. And that way, the guy ends up with nothing. Continues the Gemara. Arva Dayoni Havu B'Sedoim. There were four judges in Sedoim. And their names were Shkaroi, the Shakuroi, Zaifi, Umatli Dina. Literally, the names mean Shkaroi means a liar. Shkaroi, on the surface of it, Shkaroi means like the big liar, kind of, like doubling the rate. No, obviously, this is in Sedoim. So Shkari, the Shakuroi, and the big liar. Zaifi, the forger, Umatli Dina, and the one who perverts justice. Not necessarily were these their real names, obviously, but the fourth one is Zaifi is a forger, somebody who forges documents or whatever. Yeah. The different Meforishim explained, Marsha talks about that actually the Gemara is going to now describe, after this, the Gemara is going to describe four unjust laws of theirs, and we're going to, each of them is attributable to one of these judges. And he explains how each one of these laws that we're going to now describe is can be attributed to, it has to do with the name of one of these four judges. There's a different explanation with Reuven Margolius from a sefer called Hamasiloi that also he has a slightly different girsa in two of them. The second one he says not Shkaruroi. Actually, Marsha says the second one is not Shkaruroi. Marsha says the second one, his name must have really been Sheker Vadai, because he says, we're going to see. Well, let's learn through the four rules that they said, and then we'll talk about how those fit with the name. So, rule number one that these judges did, if somebody struck somebody else's wife, or Matule, and he caused her to miscarry, then normally the normal thing to do would be you pay, as the Torah says, you pay to make lovers, you pay for the injuries or whatever. Instead, Amrile, they would tell, she miscarried, fine, he pays to make lovers, that's all, as long as she herself wasn't killed, if she herself was killed, we talked about it earlier in the chapter, the machlokas, whether he's chayv mitzvah or not, but whatever, a normal legal system would make the guy who hit her pay something, or would give him some kind of penalty. Instead, Amrile, they would tell the husband, Yaber Niale, fine, give your wife to this guy who hit her, Dina Abre Nihaloch, let him get her pregnant again for you. And that was their idea of the law. Again, you know, they could rationalize and say, yeah, well, he made her lose her babies, therefore he has to provide new babies. But really, of course, it's, this created milk. Yeah, it's a perversion of justice. Yeah. So that's Marsha says, for example, that one is a shkarun. There is a truth behind it. It is true he could get her pregnant again, but it's a lie. It's a type of justice which is really a lie because that's not the right way to do things. As opposed to the next one, another case is if somebody would cut off the ear of somebody else's donkey, unrelated, they would say to the owner of the donkey, instead of making the guy who cut it off pay, they would tell the owner of the donkey, okay, give him the junkie and let him keep it by him until the ear grows back. So that's Marsha says, that's shkaruroi. He says, not shkaruroi, but the girsa must be sheker vadai. Because at least with the woman, okay, there is a svara behind it. It's a kruma svara, but it's a svara that he could impregnate her again. As opposed to the junkie, the ear is never going to grow back. That's a sheker vadai. That's a
very happy.
Obviously not, but the point is, in other words, at least you could it's a sheker to do such a thing, but at least there's a svara behind it. As opposed to this is a sheker vadai, it's a clear, obvious sheker because the ear is never going to grow back. A third case, depoda leilachavre, if somebody would injure somebody else, Amrile, they would tell the victim, Havle Agra, the Shakalak Dhamma, pay him because he let blood for you. Which is Zaifi, because actually Marsha relates this to the Zaifon, the forger, because it's a forgery of justice. He didn't need bloodletting at that point. And the fourth rule, they said, the Mabra Yoiva Bazuzi, if somebody crosses the river on the Mabra can, by the way, mean either a bridge or a ferry. So before we had one that said that if they cross on the Mabra, they pay one zuz, and if not, if they go some other way, they pay two. Here we're saying four and eight, respectively. So it could be maybe before we're talking about a bridge and here we're talking about a ferry, maybe before we were talking about coming into the country and here we're talking about within the country or vice versa, whatever. So if somebody crosses on the Mabra, on the bridge or the ferry, Yoiv HaBazuzi, he has to pay four zuz, the Abba Maya, but if he crossed in the water, Yoiv Kamni Zuzi, they would make him pay eight zuz, double as much. Again, what was the Kurma Svara they used? The Yad Ramah says they could argue, for example, well, you crossed in the water, therefore you absorb some of the water from the river. We now have less water, therefore pay for that. But really, of course, it was an excuse. The reason why Goliath brings a different sort of, that they would claim, hey, we're only doing it for your benefit. You're crossing in the river. There's a very fast current over here. You could drown yourself. We've got to fine you for your own good for doing such a dangerous thing. When, again, really, they were just doing it in order to... Yeah. And that's Marshall says, that's the Masli Dina, that's the one who perverted justice, like the maker. You should have to pay more for not using the bridge or the ferry or whatever. Yeah. I mentioned that the state of Hamasilois has a slightly different gear, so with two of the names of the judges. He says the second one is not Shkaruroi, but Sha'ruria, which is a word in a Pasuk in Yirmiyah that means like disgraceful. And the third one he says is not Zaisi, but Geisi, which is an Aramaic word which means Zeus. So therefore he associates them somewhat differently. Geisi, for example, would be the one with the first state over there, the married woman. The Sha'ruroi would be the one who says the rule about if you beat up somebody else and then he has to pay you for bloodletting, etc. And so he also associates the four judges with the three. Okay. So in fact the case takasin, Havu Kovit Iqualasam, the Asahu Kovit Iqualasam. One time a certain laundryman came and passed by there. Like have Dalad Zuzi. So they told him, give us four Zuz to cross on the ferry or the bridge or whatever. He says, I crossed by walking through the water. So they said, well, the rules are, and have Tmania. Then in that case, you got to pay eight. Davit for Maya, because you crossed through the water. Loyah, if he didn't want to pay the eight, Tadyuhu. So they beat him. Also, the Kamei de Dayana, he comes to one of these Dayanim, Amalei, and sure enough, the guy tells him, have Le Agra, the Shakalach Dama. First of all, you got to pay him because he let blood for you. And number two, Tmani Yazuli, Javar Tamaya, and you also have to pay the eight Zuz for crossing through the river. So the guy ended up getting whatever the exact amount was. The point is, he ended up on the wrong side in both of these things. Where with any fairness, he should have been on the right side in both. On the other hand, Eliezer Eved Abraham Isrubihas, and Eliezer, the servant of Abraham, one time visited Sodom. What's Eliezer doing visiting Sodom? Maybe to visit Lois. Maybe to try and get the people to do tshuva, whatever it was. I mean, you also have, for example, you know, at the beginning of last week's parasha, you know, who Yosha Petach Ayor Kofayim Ayoyim, that when it's hot and no guests are coming by, so the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that Abraham sent Eliezer to go around looking for guests. Maybe another time. Maybe he went all the way to Sodom, whatever. Yeah. Okay. So one time he winds up in Sodom, Padyui, and people beat him. Also, Padyui, whatever the reason was, whatever their excuse was. Also the Kamei Dayana, so of course he goes to the local court, Amalei, and of course the judge says, like he said before, Havlei Agra, pay him, the Shaka Lachdama, because he let blood for you. Well, Eliezer was smarter than that laundryman from before. Shaka Glali, he took a rock, Paduhi Ihu the Dayana, and he threw the rock at the Dayan and injured him. So he says, the judge says, what do you think you're doing? Amalei, so Eliezer says, okay, Agra enough of Liminach. The amount that you owe me for me having let blood from you, and I, you're saying, owe this other guy, have me alelai, just give it directly to the other guy. Kindly, and mind me, I'll keep the money that I have the way it is. We've learned sometimes in the Gemara about the concept in Halacha of shibudadid of nothing, that if Reuven owes Shimon money, and Shimon owes Levi money, then you just take the money directly from Reuven and give it to Levi, and leave Shimon out of it. So the other is arguing the same thing. History doesn't record, but I guess they had no choice. The law is the law. You know what? I mean, you talk about laws like this, you talk about using the law for unjust purposes, you know, an obvious example that comes to mind to anybody would be the Nazis, the Maximum. And you find, by the way, that the Nazis were very much by the book also. You know, the law is the law. I read something interesting in one of Beryl Wine's books. He mentioned there was somebody, I don't remember the name now, but I think actually it was Reb Breuer who founded the Breuer Kehillah in on the Upper West Side. Whoever it was, whether it was him or somebody else, I don't remember. He had been a chaplain in the German army during World War I, so he was entitled to a pension. So come he turned 65, the German government starts sending him a pension. If he had been living in Germany, they'd be sending him off to a concentration camp. But he's not in Germany, and the law is the law. 65, you got to pay the guy a pension. So they're paying him a pension. So he was in Manhattan. And they did. So that's so they sent him a pension. They sent him his monthly check for having served in the army in World War One. In World War One. No, he served in World War One, and now he's much older. So they're very much by the book. So the people of Sodom, that apparently is the same kind of thing. They had their unjust laws. They twisted the law every which way. But you know, if the law is the law, then okay, you know, fine. Yeah.
reversibility.
Yeah. Another example. Yeah, in other words, if he had been in Germany, they'd be sending him off to the concentration camps, but because he's not, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, onward. Havilahu Puraisa. In Sdoim, they also had beds. They have a Magne Aloochin. They would have the famous bed of Sdoim that they have guests sleep on. Ki Marich, if the guy was too long for the bed, Gaizilay, then they cut him short. Ki Gurtsin, if he was too short, Masimay, then they'd stretch him out. Again, you know, they probably use the excuse, well, you gotta fit the bed properly, but whatever it is, yeah, obviously. Again, Eliezer Eved Avraham Ikulas, and Eliezer Eved Avraham one time came to Sdoim. Omrele kum goni akulia, so they offered him, come sleep on one of these beds. Omrele hoin, he says, I can't. Nidra nadri, I made a neder, min yoyme de mita, ever since my mother died, lo yamina puya, I don't sleep on a bed. So that way he got away with it. Marsha explains, by the way, before on Amar Aleph, at the end, we quoted a number of sukkim from Eov, that where again, one of Eov's soliloquies, where he's complaining, why is the Rishoyim have it so good in this world, and the number of the psukim refer to the people of Sdoim. So he explains that a lot of the phrases in the psukim are hints, are mnemonic slides for the different stories that we have over here. They had, for example, the pasuk over there, Chamur Yisoim Yinhogu, that refers to what we were saying before about the if a guy cuts off the ear of somebody else's donkey, then they take away the donkey from him and give it to the guy who did it. The Al Godish Yishkoid, he says, refers to our story over here with Eliezer, where he says, you know what, instead of sleeping on a bed, I'd rather sleep on a Godish, on a haystack, rather than on one of your beds, etc. Okay.
Kuf Tes
Amud Beis, first line of the wide lines. Okay, another example. If you have a Mitzvah Lehu Anya, if a poor person did somehow or other wind up in Sdoim, he didn't see all the warning signs telling him to keep away, so what would they do? Yavah le'kochav v'chad dinra. So fine, each person, okay, we're normal civilized people, we give tzedakah, so each person will give him a dinner, we'll give him a coin, but because of shmei alei, each person would write their name on their coin. V'rifta le'hav amamtile, they wouldn't give him bread. And if he wants to go and try to buy... No, they would give him, each person gave him a coin with their name written on it. They would not, if he would ask for bread, they wouldn't give him. And if he wanted to use those coins to buy bread, he would find nobody accepting those coins in the stores. So what happens in the end? Well, you can't eat coins. Eventually, the guy dies of hunger. If you have a mist, eventually, when he dies, then each person can come and take back their coin because they're all labeled with their name. Later on, the Gemara is going to mention in a few lines the famous story of the girl who actually gave an oni food and they ended up punishing her. So that's the point. In other words, like she's breaking down our conventions over here. We're only supposed to be giving money. The guy is not supposed to be getting food, and he or she subverted that by giving. We'll see in a few lines. Okay. Another example: Hoshi Amti Benayu. The people of Sdoim made the following tenai among themselves: Kol man demazmin gavro lebehi lola. Anybody who invites somebody to a wedding, somebody from out of town or whatever, to a wedding, l'shalach glimmer. L'shalach glimmer, he will be stripped of his clothing. So if a citizen of Sdoim invites some out of town to a wedding, then that citizen will be punished by having his clothing taken away. So having high hilula. So one time there was a wedding going on in Sdoim. Ikla Eliezer, and Eliezer Eved Avraham again, came and was in Sdoim at the time. And they weren't giving him food, obviously. So now when it came time for the Suda, and Eliezer is hungry, he needs something to eat. Also Eliezer, the Yosef was safer to Kuru. He went and sat by the last table, like. Omrule, the people around him say, Mana Azman Achlach, we don't recognize you. Who invited you over here? So he turns to one of the guys sitting at the table, and he says, "Atas Manton, you invited me." Well, Omar, so now the guy's afraid. Dilma Shami Bidan Azminte, that people may overhear that I'm the one who invited him, and I won't have any way to prove that I didn't. Omar Shalke Le Moni Dai Gabriel, and I'll take away my clothing. Shako Glume Dao Ahudi Yosef Gabe. So the guy who's sitting next to him picks up his coat, and he runs away. And then Eliezer seats himself by another table and repeats the performance. Adonati Kulu, until everybody hears that. But after you, this is not that now. Eliezer has a good meal to eat.
Very smart.
On the other hand, have Yang Yi Rishita, there was this young girl, to have a Tamasa Rishalania, she would bring out bread for a poor person, Bechatra, in her water pitcher. So like she's going out to draw water, as we see in this week's parish, that the girls would go out in the evenings to draw water. She would hide bread in her pitcher and bring it to this un. The Medrash says that this is actually one of Lloyd's daughters. And the Medrash gives her a name, Places or something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he's lying milk, but the people discovered it, because I guess after a while they realize that Ani is not dying, so somebody's got to be supplying him, so they found it. Shafua Dusha, they smeared her with honey, but Ikmual Igershura, and they put her on top of the wall. Also Ziburi Vahlua, and bees came to attracted to the honey and stung her and killed her. Behind her dechtiv, and that was the last straw. This is the Eibishter says, "Vayomer Hashem zakach zayim v'amoda ki roba." The cry of zayim and amoda is great. So what's the word ki roba? V'amod of Yehuda, amar Rabba al iske riva. The word raba, which means great,
is related to roba, whatever. It's similar to the word riva, which means a young girl. So her cry is the last straw, and that's the Eibishter said. That's it. I'm going to
destroy zayim. And Mepharshim point out, by the way, the vote is because why is the Gemara assuming that it was after her cries? I mean, were there the cries of all these other people who were wronged over there? The reason is because the word zakas, the word zakas in Tanakh refers to the cries of the local people the word zakas refers to the cries of the victims, but on the other hand, it states zoyim v'amora. So if it was the cries of the victims from out of town, you wouldn't call it the cry of Sodom and Amora. It's the cries of the people who came and then passed through Sodom and Amora. The expression Zaka Sodom and Amora implies it must have been a citizen of Sodom and Amora who is crying out. And how would that be? That was this girl who was feeding the Oni. Otherwise it would have had to say Zaka of the people who are passing through Sodom and Amora or whatever. Yeah.
She was the trigger.
So she was the trigger, yeah.
Now, the missionary continued. The Mirage will name like Teresa and Abba. The Mirage, and by the way, I mean, I go, like, Law takes this out, and also Nasser is
abusing, Yerushalmi takes it out as well. So not everybody agrees to this line over here that we're going to say the Miraglim have no Teresa and Abba, but that's, we have it in our Gemara over here. Marsha discusses it, and then says, again, when we learned in the Mishnah, we said that Marsha says the Miraglim are even worse off than the Dera Midbar, because not only they have no Chelik Manam Abba, but they also have to be judged, which means that they stand up for another for another punishment as opposed to the rest of the Dera Midbar. Anyway, Miraglim ain't lam Chelik Manam Abba. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayemusu ha'anoshim ma'kia devas ha'aretz Yisrael b'magefa. The Pasuk says the people who spoke evil about Eretz Yisrael, b'magefa, they died in a plague, implying Vayemusu b'olam hazeh b'magefa lo'olam haba. They died in this world and in a plague lo'olam haba.
And therefore they don't
have a Chelik Manam Abba. We did talk about in the Mishnah
the verse that the Gor Chassidus said actually that the Dura Midbar in general, I don't know if the Miraglim as well, but the Dura Midbar in general, when you say Inlam Chelik Olam Haba,
actually means the Pnimi Seinyonim, it means they're higher than Olam Haba. It means they don't need Olam Haba, but yeah, we talked about it in the Mishnah a couple of days ago, because they're higher than Olam Haba.
So the first of the two should be in order.
But there's also, right, that's true. There are also explanations of what Olam Haba means. Does it mean where everybody goes after 120, or does it mean the world after Tchias HaMeisim? Right, we talked about that at the beginning of the paragraph here. Okay. Adas Korach in Olam Haba.
Then he says in the Mishnah that the congregation of Korach has no favor to Olam Haba.
Because the pasuk says "Vatachas alei ma'aretz va'olam hazeh," so the double expression "Vatachas alei ma'aretz," the earth covered them up, means "va'olam hazeh." "Va'yovdim itech ha'kol," they were lost from among the congregation, means "va'olam haba." Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, on the other hand, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says, no,
Aleim Omer. So those are the people about whom the prophet says in Chana's Tzila, after Shmuel was born, he says, Hashem nameth him Chaya, Hashem killed and brings alive,
murdered Sheol Vayal, he brings down into Gehenna and brings back up. So yes, they went down to Gehenna, but they will come back up.
How do we know anything about them?
Because who else is murdered Sheol Vayal? But besides that also, who else did we find that went down into Gehenna and came back up? But besides that also, we talked about in the Mishnah, Chana herself, well, at least I don't know if she was, but her husband Elkanah and her son Shmuel are descendants of Korach. And in fact, Rashi mentions on the Pesukim over there in Korach what misled Korach in the first place, is he saw that he's going to have all these great descendants. Shmuel was on the level of Moshe and Aaron, Bekonah, Shmuel, Bekonah, Shmoy. So therefore, he figured that I must be the chosen one of Hashem. So therefore, like Chana felt a certain responsibility that it's because of my son that Korach was misled. Therefore, it's only right that I should be davening that he should come back up. that he and his group should come back up.
Her son?
Her son is Shmuel. So maybe she herself was also a descendant. I don't know. In those days, it was very common. People tended to marry within their shevet and even within fairly close relatives, where her mother and Halacha. Was Chana herself a descendant of Korach? I don't know. But certainly her husband, Elkanah, and her son, Shmuel, were. Okay. So now we're going to expand a bit on Adat Korach. We're going to talk a bit about the whole story of Korach. But first of all, Tana Rabbanan. Adas Korach Ein Lam Chelek Olam Abba. Again, the Braita starts the same way as the Mishnah, but the congregation of Korach has no Chelek Olam Abba. Shenem Avad Achas Aleim Aoretz Baim Azeh Vayogdim Tachal Olam Abba Zivir Ad Akiva. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Beseira Oimer. So now we have some of the Mishnah. We had Rabbi Yehuda says, bring the Pasuk Hashem Meim Yisim Achayah. In the Braita, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Beseira brings a different thing. Harein Tav Veda HaMispakeshet. They are like a lost object that is searched for and eventually found. In other words, yes, they're not by Yogi Mitecha Kahal as in they're lost forever. The very words by Yogi Mitecha Kahal themselves imply that there's a future for them. Shenema, as the prophet says in Tillim, Ta'isi Kiseri, right? I've wandered, I've strayed like a lost sheep. Bake Shavdecha, Hashem, seek your servant, look for your servant, because I have not forgotten your mitzvahs. Meaning, in other words, the Gemara's understanding, the Behudah Ben Beseira's understanding, that pasuk is referring to Adas Korach because mitzvah Sefer Leshachachti. They did, in fact, keep all the mitzvahs. As Korach himself says in his opening argument to Moshe, it says, Kola Eda Kola Kedoshim, the whole congregation is holy. The Gemara itself is going to quote that pasuk later on in the story. So therefore, it applies to the Jewish people collectively in general, yes. But now we're referring it specifically. As a matter of fact, yes, at the end of Matzot, in a few weeks, that's Hashem, the next Masechta, the Sanhedrin is Matzot. At the end of Matzot, we're going to mention that pasuk as well, about the Jewish people collectively. Yeah, about the Jewish people collectively. But here, we're talking specifically, if we're saying by Yovim Mitech HaKohol, that the congregation of Korach was lost, don't think, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Beseira says, don't think like Rabbi Akiva, that it means they're lost and that's it, they're goners. No, it means they're lost, but they will be found and brought back. No, but he said, I mean, I'm Kelly Chelik Lama Boy, he said.
Did he say they wanted to come back? There's no Yiddish? It's not
really. Yeah, there's no Yiddish, I guess you could say, yeah. Okay, so now let's analyze the story. The Pesach starts off by Yikach Korach, that Korach took. Now, the Pesach doesn't say what he took. You either, by Yikach Korach, the Nitzim and Kaslam, the Mevim, the Dalsam, Abir, Bnei Elev, Vahim, and Pelos, Bnei Ruvin, and the next Pesach is by Yakumu, Lifnei Moshe. They stood up in front of Moshe. So there's no object of the word by Yikach Korach. So what does it mean? So Rashi on the pasuk says, "Walka chasnu l'sadecha," he took himself to one side to create a machlokes. The Gemara wants to understand it differently.
Maybe.
No, but then it would say, "Vayikach Korach," and he took to the following people. Yeah. Amar Shlokes shalokach mekach ra'al atnu. I mean, he took a bad deal for himself by starting the squabble. And in fact, Marshall says the vote is usually a rich person, especially a rich person, as we're going to say later on. Korach was very, very rich. Usually looks for the best possible business deal. In this case, he got the worst deal. And in this case, he did a really bad deal. He got the worst deal for himself. Yeah. Okay. Why is he called Korach? Shenasa Korcha b'Yisrael, because it became a bold spot among the Jewish people. Like, there became something is missing, though all those people were swallowed up in the ground. Marshall says also, it's also a bold spot in the sense the name Korach has never again been used for any year. Shame to show him Yerkov. And the name Korach, we find it as one of the Alufei Esav, but we never find it among the Jewish people ever again. In that sense, like a bold spot where nothing ever grows back. Okay. Why is he called Ben Yitzhar? Now, of course, the simple thing is his name was Korach, and his father's the same name as Yitzhar. The Gemara is bothered by why does it have to list his whole genealogy? Whenever it mentions the genealogy of a person in Tanakh, besides the simple sense that it teaches us who his father was and his father was, etc., it also is meant to teach us something about the person himself. Otherwise, it doesn't have to identify him by his whole family lineage at all.
Didn't want to show that he went up to Moshe Rabbeinu, but not mention Moshe Rabbeinu's name.
Say what?
Didn't want to mention that.
Oh, that's Yaakov you're talking about. Yeah, the Gemara's going to say in a second. Yeah, Rashi mentions that on the pasuk, but wait, the Gemara's going to talk about that. Yeah. So why Ben Yitzhar? Yes, Ben Shehir Tia Olam Kolo Olam Katarayim. It means that he made the entire world. Shehir Tia, that he made the entire world boil, and in a sense, it actually says angry Katarayim, like the bright noon. When we say it's Kolo Olam, means the Eibishter. He made the Eibishter angry at him as much as the heat of the sun at high noon. Katarayim Eloshin Yitzhar. Ben-Kohos, why the next one is Ben-Kohos, why? Ben-Shehikos Shine Melidov. It means that he blunted the teeth of his ancestors. Like all his ancestors now are embarrassed of him. Marshall says, in fact, this is his ancestor cost, and the rest. In fact, Marshall says, the vote is, up until that point, it was considered to be a very prestigious thing that you're descended from Kohos, who is, after all, the most favored son of Levi, kind of. He's the one that they carry the Oren and the Kalim and whatever. In fact, the Medrash says Korach himself was one of the ones who carried the Oren. Now, as a result of Korach's deed, now the whole family of Kohos is tarnished. Now the people don't think it to be such a great thing anymore that you're descended from Kohos. So in that sense, like, he blunted all their teeth and made, like, now they all share in that embarrassment. Ben Levi, and why does it continue that he's Ben Levi? Ben Shanasa Lavoya the Gehenna. It means that he made himself an accompaniment in Gehenna. Like he wound up in Gehenna, like as if he got accompanied there. So the question is, Velech should now be Ben Yaakov.
He accompanied himself?
Yeah, he accompanied himself, basically. Yeah, like he made himself after, yeah. So the question is, Velech should now be Ben Yaakov, Ben Shaokov Asma the Gehenna. In that case, why doesn't the pasuk go on and also identify him then as Ben Yaakov, which would then give us a drosha that Ben Shaokov Asma the Gehenna, that he stepped himself into Gehenna? And the answer is, Amr Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchok, Yaakov, Dikash Rachim, and Alachma, like you were just saying, Yaakov, namesake. Yaakov davened for Rachmanus, for himself, that his name should not be mentioned in this connection. In other words, one idea is, the fact that we're mentioning all these names, we're saying that they all tell us something about Korach, but also it means, in other words, that the root of this of what turned out with Korach, the root of the evil that developed in Korach, already existed in a finer way in the previous generations. A little more in Yitzhar, a little less in Kohos, a little less in Levi. Yaakov is davening for Rachmim that none of that should be noticeable at all in him. There shouldn't be like the source of that.
How do we know that?
That's because of what I was going to say. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yaakov says in his brachas, and Yaakov says in his brachas. Well, okay, to Shimon and Levi, it wasn't brachas; it was criticism. He says, "The soid of altavei nafshi, let my nefesh not come into their secret plot, or b'kohol about teichad kvodi, and in their conversation, let my kavod, meaning my neshama, not be united." But the soid of altavei nafshi in the meraglim. This means when it comes to the meraglim, none of the meraglim, each of the meraglim is identified by their shevet. None of them are identified as Ben Yaakov. So therefore, he's davening. That's, in other words, by the same thing. The evil of the meraglim should not be traceable, should not be associated with, should not be traceable to him. And Rashi on the pasuk says differently. Actually, not the meraglim, because the meraglim are for all the shvatim, not the shimon. Rashi on the pasuk refers it to the story of Zimri, where the pasuk identifies Zimri as an nesibes of Moshimoni, that he's a nasi of Shevet Shimon, and it doesn't go on to say Ben Yaakov. The Yaakov davened that he should be excluded from that. Well, we call him, I'll take a quote, he's Adas Korach. When he continues, in their congregation, let my covered not be united. This is Adas Korach, that he asks that his name should not be mentioned in that context. Even though his name could be used for a drasha for that purpose, he didn't want his name to be associated. By the way, Rashi mentions on the pasuk over there that, on the other hand, in Divrei Yomim, it mentions descendants of Korach who sang songs in the Beit Hamikdash, who were the Beim, who were among the ones who sang in the Beit Hamikdash. It mentions over there one Osef, you have a number of Kepepa Hantilim, Lamaseach, La Osef, Mizmer La Osef, or whatever that's this Osef, and it traces them generation by generation, all the way back, Ben Kohos, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Levi, Ben Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kohos, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. So there it actually does trace them all the way back to Yaakov, but not here.
Whatever reason.
Because Yaakov asked that he shouldn't be associated with
Asaph.
So Asaph, when it comes to Asaph, that's a positive thing. He's being spoken of as one of the Levim who sang in the Beth Mikdash. So then to demonstrate that on the other hand there Yaakov deserves to have his yichus all the way back to Yaakov, so there it does. It traces him all the way back to Yaakov Yisrael. Okay, let's douse in some of the other names in that connection. We say that there was Korach, there was Dothan and Aviram, and then there was Oin Ben Pelos Bnei Reuven. So Dothan is called that Sha'over al-Das, because he violated the Das, the Torah and the Mitzvah. Sha'over al-Das Kael, because he violated the Das of the Eishter. Aviram, why is Aviram named that? She'ibir asnim after his Truva. He strengthened himself, he hardened himself against doing Truva. And Marashah points out, you know, you have, really the first time we ever come across Dothan and Aviram, not by name, but you have in Parashat Shemot, when Moshe sees two Jews fighting, no, even before that, in Parashat Shemot, when Moshe sees two Jews fighting, and he goes, Lama Sakare. I thought, actually says on the positive, it was nothing, Abiram. So whatever they were fighting about doesn't matter, but the point is that you would think then that Aviram should hold it against Dothan. Why should he want to join together with him ever again when Dothan was busy beating him up? Yet Iber Atzmeim Atzei Shuvah, he hardened himself against doing Shuvah. He'd rather be sticking with Dothan and going about these kinds of things. Okay. Then we have Oin Mempelet. Why is he called Oin? She Yosha Baninus. He's called that because he's sat in moon. Because he did tshuva for having originally been with them. As we're going to tell now the story of how he ended up, he originally was with them, but then right. He did tshuva. So Oin Ben Pelas. So Oin Shiyoshabaninus. Pelas is called Shanasu like Plois because his Plois were done for him. So Rashi says, Shanitsa Mehem, that he was saved from them, which means Rashi may be understanding the word Pela. The word Pela has a double meaning. The word Pela can mean separated. Like Ishki Yakli Neder, when a person separates out and then makes himself a Nazir, and it can also mean Pela as in a net. So it can be, in other words, that he separated himself from them in the end through his wife, as we're going to say in a minute, or it can mean that a net happened to him. Anyway, that's why he's called Ben Pela.
What kind of net?
That's what the Gemara is going to say. Then, actually, the Gemara is not going to tell all the details, but the Gemara will tell the basics of the story, and the Medrash fills in the details. Okay, Ben Reuben, maybe that's Taka why Rashi just says Shapira Shanit on the hand, because the Gemara Taka doesn't spell out exactly what Neth happened to him, that's the Neth Medrash spelled out. Anyway, Ben Reuben, why is he attributed in the prophet as a son of Reuben, besides, of course, the fact that he really was from Shevet Reuben?
But
Ben Reuben can also mean a descendant of Reuben, but part of the question is, Dothan and Aviram are also from Shevet Reuben. So in that case, it should have said, Dothan and Aviram, B'nei Eliyah, B'nei Pelos, B'nei Reuben. Why Ben Reuben as if he's the only one? Means Ben Shira'a V'Havin. He saw and understood that they were acting improperly and he withdrew from them. So Shira'a V'Havin. He saw and he understood that he's going the wrong way and he has to turn around.
That is?
That's Oin Ben Pelas. That's what I'm saying. Oin Ben Pelas was originally involved in this machlokas, but then he withdrew, realizing that they're going in the wrong direction. Yosha Ben Ninus. Yes, he sat mourning doing sugar for you. So Amar Rav, Oin Ben Pelas Ishta Hitzimhalas. Oin Ben Pelas Ishta Hitilatu. Oin Ben Pelas was saved by his wife. How is this? Omrele, she says to him, "My Nasa Lachmina, why are you bothering to get involved in this fight? What do you have to gain from it anyway? If Moshe Rabbeinu remains the Rebbe, you're going to still be the Talmud. The Ima Rabba and Talmud, and if Korach becomes the new Rebbe, you're right, you're going to be a Talmud. So what do you have to gain?" Amalah, so he says to her, "My Eved, so what can I do? It's too late already. Havoi Be'etza, I was in their group, in this plot that we're gonna start this machlokas. The Ishtaboyli Bahadai, when I swore that I'm gonna join with them, that when they call me, I'm gonna go. So therefore I don't have a choice." Amrelay, so she says to him, she thinks to herself like this, "Yadina Dekula Knishta Kadishta Ninu. I know that the whole congregation, the whole Jewish people are holy people. Dichtim, as a positive, Tikola Ida Kulam Kadoshim, as a positive, all of the congregation are holy. So therefore, she figured, meaning that it was the whole Jewish people collectively, including the entire Adap Torah. They're all holy people, they're all good, fine Jews, and therefore she says, I have an idea how I'm going, therefore she says to herself, I have an idea how I'm going to save. Marsha explains actually that her point was a little bit different. This is still part of her argument to him. That saved him after all. So what do you think? Okay, so let's say, for example, you figure they'll make a girdle, maybe to decide who will be the next leader. Fine, but the whole congregation is holy. They're all equally suitable. So in that case, it's a very good chance.
Meaning,
in other words, that if you're going to argue that Moshe needs to be replaced by Korach or whatever, so fine, eventually they may need to make a girdle, let's say, to determine who actually gets what position. Fine, but your chances aren't very good. You're one out of 600,000 people. So according to Marsha, that's what she's saying. According to Rashi, what she's saying is, this is an introduction to what she's saying, I have an idea how I'm going to save him. I'm going to leverage the fact that Kola Eda Kolam Kadoshi. So what did she do? Omrele, so she says to him, "Tu, you sit here, Dano Matsumalok, I will save you." What does she do? Ashkise Chamna, she gave him wine to drink, Ba'arvise, she got him drunk, Ba'agnise Gavoi, and she put him to bed, to sleep inside their tent. Then Oisval Baba, she sits by the entrance of the tent, the Satarja Lamazia, and she undid her hair. She took off her tichel and started undoing and undid her hair. So now she's sitting there with her hair uncovered. Called off, so anybody who comes to, so when people came from Korak group to call him, we're ready, we're going to go confront Moshe now. Hodder, he turned around. There's a lady over here sitting on Sneerste. That's Kola Eda, Kola Mdoshi. You see over here the level they were on, by the way. You see, you know, I mean, how many of us, we walk around all the time. We see women with uncovered hair and we don't think twice about it. They were on a high level.
She saved him.
So she saved him. Meanwhile, as all this was going on, eventually they got swallowed up, and he, being sleeping there inside the tent, was saved. The Medrash, in fact, goes even further. The Medrash says this is the next that happened here. So the Gemara elsewhere discusses the Gemara elsewhere discusses the question: how did everybody from all over the Machne, anybody from Korach's group, they weren't necessarily all in one place? How did they all fall into the ground? So the Gemara elsewhere talks about a machlokas different mouths open for the ground in different places in the ground. Like every Rashi actually mentions it. Rashi mentions it on Rashi mentions it in Parshas Eser. So like if a person is here in the Machna, then a hole would open up in the ground here. If it's here, it would open up here, etc. That's one opinion. The other opinion is there was like one gigantic big funnel, and everybody rolled, wherever somebody is in the Machna, he all rolls towards that one big hole. Rashi mentions it on Parshas Eser. So we're mentioned a little bit briefly about Dustin and Abiram getting swallowed up on the ground. So therefore, the Medrash says actually what happened was is now Onan sleeping there in the tent, and all of a sudden the hole starts opening up over there, or the ground starts sloping over there to schlep him into the hole also. Until Oin's wife grabs a hold of the bed and calls out to the Eivishter, my husband has done shuvah, he's not going with them anymore, leave him alone. And Takei was left alone. On the other hand, it's say the Korach. On the other hand, Korach's wife is the one who brought him to destruction, because Amrale, it started with that she says to him, "Chazim my ka'ovid Moshe, look what Moshe is doing to you. Look what degrading things he's doing. First of all, look how much covet he's trying to grab for himself. Eu having Malka, he is the king, he's the leader of the Jewish people. La'achui shaviya kana rabbi, he made his brother Kohen Gadol. Livnei achui shavinu sgoni dekana, his nephew is he made deputy Kohenim. E after Truma, when Truma comes, Amat Tehevi Lekohen, he says he has to go to the Kohenim, also to enrich his family. He also Meister, the Shakil to Altun, and if Meister comes, if you Levi'im at least are entitled to, Korach being a Levi. Omar, he still says, take one tenth of it and give it to the Kohen. So no matter what, he's privileging himself and his family over you, over everybody else. The Oid, and not. Apparently not, man. Yeah. In fact, the in Yalkut Shimoni, it tells in more detail that Korach himself gives the whole scenario over there involving, he gives to make fun of Moshe and to make fun of Mitzvah. He gives a whole scenario over there about a lady who's growing, a widow or something, who's growing some crops, and Moshe and Aaron come by demanding Truma and Meiser and Reishas Haget and then whatever, and then she says, you know what, forget about the fields, I'll sell the fields and I'll buy myself some animals, and they're still coming by with Zroi Lachayim Bekeva, Reishas Haget, and she finally says, forget about it, I'll just shech them, and then I'll just bring it as a korban, and then Aaron says, oh, well, then this is the korban, and the whole thing goes to me. So Korach used it to make fun of the whole concept. So,
Yeah.
What? They still kept the mitzvah. They may have made fun of them, but they still kept them. The question is why are they still saying kol eidah kol kedoshim if they're making fun of the mitzvah? In a chanami, yeah.
But we said
kol eidah. We said even when people were coming to fetch oil, they would turn around when they saw his wife sitting over there with her hair uncovered. First of all, I mean, sometimes people are careful with some areas of mitzvahs and not others. But besides that also, you know, I mean, they could be making fun, but they still quote keep the mitzvahs, you know. They're still not becoming poker or whatever, yeah. Okay. Anyway. And not only that, what did Moshe do to you? Now, we have at the beginning of Parashat Vayikra that describes how the Eidoshah tells Moshe to take the Levim and prepare them for serving in the Mishkan, and part of the process is shave off all their hair. Havir Atara called the Sodom. So he cut off all your hair. He's playing around with you like a piece of dung. like that time of your work there. In fact, now Shaw says the verse is saying, Mela, at least if he treated you guys like an Azirim, fine, at least the hair would be used for a purpose. You burn it under the hot where carbon is being cooked. Fine, that's at least a Mela. But the hair of a Levium, we don't find that anything special was done with it. The pastor said it was just thrown away. So therefore, like, he's just doing it in order to treat you guys like dirt. In a yard. The real reason it actually says on the pasuk it actually brings from a Moshe Adarshan is that the Levium were taking over. The whole point is Levium are substituting for the Bechorim. The Bechorim are worship of Adazara, which of Adazara is compared to Torah. And a Metzora, when he finishes, you made Toma, has to shave. So therefore, Levium symbolically standing in for the Bechorim, has to shave. That was the real reason. But she took it as like he's doing it to make fun of you guys, to make you look ridiculous. Ain't a Yohib. Ah, that's what Gemara is going to say in a second. Ain't a Yohib Mazdaichu. Obviously, what happened is Moshe was looking enviously or whatever at your hair, and therefore he had it all shaved off, so you don't look nice anymore. On the law, the Korach says, what Yonami called it. Okay, but Moshe himself also had his hair shaved off. He's one of the Levium as well, so he went through the same thing. On relay, so Korach's wife says, still, given the cooler of both of the day, since all of the Gdula is his, as we said before, there's Truma, and there's Truma Meister, and there's Kohuna, and so forth, since he has all the Gdula for himself, Omar, so he doesn't mind if he has one thing in which he's humiliated. Omar, Iunami, Thomas, Napshi, and Plishtim. Fine, let me die with the Plishtim. In other words, fine. I'll also go and shave my hair. At least I have the chance to mock everybody else that they had and make them look ridiculous for shaving their hair. It means I have to do it as well. Okay, so I'll have temporary humiliation, but at least I have the satisfaction of seeing that everybody else is doing the same ridiculous thing. This is what she's arguing. And she says, furthermore, furthermore, what is this? Moshe is telling you a mitzvah to make tchelet for tzitzis. Mitzvah. If you're going to say tchelet is really so important that it counts as a mitzvah, then take telesim of all tchelet for kasinu lekula mitzvasa and use it to cover your whole all the members of your bris medrash. This is the famous thing Rashi mentions on the pasuk that he had 250 guys with him all wearing talis shakula tchelet. And arguing that there should be positive consistency then. So now we have the contrast between Oin's wife and Korach's wife, where Oin's wife saved him and Korach's wife destroyed him. This is what it means. It says that a positive initially, the wise one among the women built up her house, Zuish Deshal Oin Mempelos, that refers to Oin Mempelos' wife who saved her husband, the Ivelos, Beyoda Teresenu, but a foolish woman with her own hand tears it down, Zuish Deshal Korach, that's referring to Korach's wife who she raised him on and caused him to be destroyed. The pasuk continues, they stood up in front of Moshe along with these people mentioned, the pasuk, Korach and Dathan Aviram and Oin, and along with 250 people of Bnei Yisrael. So what's the expression, v'anoshim v'bnei Yisrael, chamishim mosayim, means miyuchadim shebe'edah. It means special ones among the people. It means not just any random 250 people. It means 250 distinguished people. Anoshim usually means distinguished people. The pasuk continues that the pasuk refers to them by three expressions. The C.A. Eda, Kri Moed, and Sheshem. So the Gemara is not dashing the C.A. Eda because it seems pretty obvious what that means. The C.M. were people who are capable of being the C.M. whatever. But Kriye Moyed means Shehoyu Yodim La'Aba Shonim and Asleya Chadoshim. These are people who had the expertise to be able to determine when an Ibru Yer has to be declared and how to be Mepadish L'Chodesh, which of course is very complicated stuff. So it means that they were very high level to Menachem Chachamim, yeah? And Anshe Shem, Shoyulam Shem, B'chol Olam. They're called Anshe Shem in the sense that they had a worldwide renown. They were very important. Outside of the Jewish people, I don't know anybody in the desert. Anybody who came by to visit the Yidden and then went back home, they would know about them. Okay. Pasuk continues by Yishma Moshe by Yipol Aponim. The next pasuk continues that Moshe hears the Korach makes his argument Kolayido Kolam Kedoshim or Madurat Sinasu, and the pasuk continues by Yishma Moshe by Yipol Aponim. Moshe heard and he fell on his face. So the question is Mashmur Shoma. What exactly did he hear? And Marshall explained, the point of the question is, if it was just that he and Kodak and his group are making this argument, then it shouldn't only be Moshe. The same to Moshe and Aaron, like Kala al Moshe al Aaron. Why is only Moshe falling on his face? It means that besides what we're saying, he is the Pasuk, that they accuse Moshe and Aaron, or Madura Tisnasu, or Kal Hashem, why are you raising yourselves up over the congregation of Hashem? Besides that, there must be something specific that they're accusing Moshe. What is it?
Shama means he heard or
it means he heard or he understood. But the point is, why is he saying only Moshe when they were accusing Aaron as well? So it must mean there's something else of which they're accusing only Moshe. What is it? Omer of Shmuel Manachmeni. Omer Rabbi Yonah said, Shechashdu me'eshes ish. I know you obviously have your questions, so hold on. They suspected him about an eshes ish. Shanem, I was a positive by Yitkanu L'Moshe Mamachne. As a positive said in Tillim, they were jealous about Moshe in the Machne. So, of course, the simple meaning is they were jealous, as in over here, they're jealous of his preeminence or whatever. But we know the word Kinui also has the meaning of, as in Kinui Yastira, by a Soita, where the husband warns his wife. And Omer Shmuel Bar Yitzchok, Malama Chakalach Abachat Kineh Ishtim Moshe. This teaches us that each of these people was going and giving his wife an official Kinui. Don't be alone with Moshe. Shanema, the apostle says, by Moshe yikach the oil, by the nafalim mechutz the machne. The apostle says Moshe took his tent and pitched it outside the machne, meaning what Rashi says, so that they're not choshed him anymore. Now, how could anybody even think to be choshed Moshe of such a thing? So you have, there are.
This was after he was divorcing.
No, this is after he separated from Sephora, and actually Marshall makes the point, that's the thing. They figured like this. These people figured, you know what, nobody can be completely separated for that long. If he's not with his wife, it must mean he's being with somebody else, and that's why they're choshed him, unjustly, of course, but. There is an explanation that one of the Mephoshim gives along the lines of it doesn't literally mean that they were choshed him on an Asian dish. It just means when a person is, as Mara talks about elsewhere, that when a person is nisgar la tzibur, that when a person lords it over the tzibur inappropriately, it's like it's compared in a certain sense to nus, and in that sense it's part of the same thing. They're accusing him, madur tisnasu al kal Hashem, why you're lording over everybody else. But you have most of the other Mephoshim say it means more literally, and again, so you have what Marshall is saying, that they're arguing that if he's separated from his wife, he must be with somebody else. There's also, for example, we have that the people would come to him all the time, especially the part we're saying over here that his tent was outside the machna. People are coming to him all the time to learn Torah, to ask Shilas or whatever. So the husbands could use it as an excuse. Hey, our wives are going out there where there could be a situation.
Going with the husband?
Not necessarily. So therefore, they could be arguing there's a situation of Yehud. And in fact, actually, the Rashi is learning that he put it in order to avoid their complaint. This explanation that I'm giving, I think it's from a Reuven Margolis, is the other way around. Because he had his tent outside the machne, and therefore people are coming to him sometimes individually to ask shilas or whatever. Therefore, that's when people and therefore actually he says that is why the one second
Yeshua was there.
That's exactly why the plot continues. And Moshe says Yeshua ben Nun Nar lo Yomish Mitzvah Oil, that Yeshua is always there in the tent. In other words, to tell us that yes, these people's suspicions were completely unfounded because there is no possibility of Yehud Yeshua is always there. They bring that after the Chetah Egel, we know the famous thing, the women weren't involved in the Chetah Egel, in fact, when their husbands asked them for their jewelry, they refused. But after the Chetah Egel, then it's good that the women didn't want to have anything to do with their men. Well, you're Meshumad, why should I have anything to do with you? So now the husband turned around and used that as an excuse, that in that case, then you're listening to Moshe more than to us, so then something, there might be something fishy going on over there. Okay. Obviously it was all choshes
b'ksheirim.
Okay. The pasuk continues by Yochum Moshe by Yelech of Dothan and Avira. Later on in the story of Korah, it says Moshe got up and he went to Dothan and Avira. So why is he going personally? From here we see that you shouldn't hold on to an argument. So fine, Dothan and Avir, he asked Dothan and Aviram to come to him. They refused. They're very chutz to take away, as it says over there in the Pesukim. So Moshe is going to go to them. Avir, we can try to patch up things that way. Da'amar Rav, as we find that Rav says, called a mafik machloikus over the lab. If a person holds on to a machloikus, then he's over on a lab. Shanema, as the Pesuk says later on, after the story, the Lord Yeh Kodach Lahadothi. He should not be like Kodach and his congregation. In other words, Kodach and his congregation were making a machloikus. Don't be like them. Now, the Rambam actually talks about in Sefer HaMitzvot, it doesn't literally mean that there was a loikus that said to be machloikus. It's not one of the 613 mitzvot. The Gemara is saying it over here to express the idea how bad it is to be involved in machlokes. But it's not technically one of the six reasons. But Rambam disagrees with that, but he says even then, fine. It's a loisa that said not to argue against the kahuna specifically, but not.
Lashem Shemayim.
What? Yeah. Lashem Shemayim is different. We're talking about Shalom Lashem Shemayim. No, machlokes in halacha or whatever, yeah. So the Ramban learns it is taka allowed, but only when you're being koilet on the kahuna, not just a general machloek that he agrees is this is only an asma. The Rebbe actually talks about this. So we're saying the loyalty kodach v'chadose. We just said before kodach v'chadose. We're just doing machlokes. They were being kofer and mitzvahs and all kinds of other problems over here. Why are we mentioning specifically the machlokes? The Rebbe talks about mitzvah. You see from here, machlokes is kind of even worse than kfira. So if we're saying don't be like kodach, that means don't be a bar machlokes, not don't be a kofer.
Because we then mention it.
Because we're not mentioning, don't be a kofer, because don't be like kodach, but don't be a bar machlokes. Yeah. This is the truth. That's why Yaakov is mentioning that in Pilkei Avos, we say that machlokes of Shem Shemayim is machlokes of Pilkei Avos, right? Machlokes of Shem Shemayim is machlokes of kodach v'chol adrof. So yeah, some of the machlokes say, the vote is, why are we saying machlokes of kodach v'chol adrof? Because it's kodach against Moshe. Against Moshe and Aaron or whatever. The vote is because even within kodach v'adrof, there were arguments. They were in a unified front, all 250 of them. Even among themselves, they had their divisions. And the portion pack on the system said that you have. So, for example, the people from Reuven, Dothan and Abiram and Oin and Pelas are involved over there because they figured Reuven was the original Bechor of Yaakov, so they're trying to get that status back. Korach is from Shevet Levi because he wants more of Shevet Levi to be Kohenim rather than it being reserved only for Aaron's family. So they themselves were cross purposes. By the way, I mean, it is worth pointing out, you know, what it talks about considers in many places, that Pnimit Ben Yonim, what Korach was trying to accomplish actually is a positive thing. La'osid Lavoi, in Mashiach's time, the Taka is going to be, the Levi'im are going to be higher than the Kohenim. That Gvura is going to be seen, Gvura, which is the Levi'im, is going to be seen to be higher than Kohenim, which are Chesed. That we never talked about it briefly in Peret Nun and Tanya, it's brought in, there's Maimonim on it in the Kutta Torah and Peret Korach. The problem was, as we find many times in Jewish history, the problem isn't the idea itself. The problem is trying to do it prematurely. The timing, exactly. Yeah.
They won't do the Avodah.
Actually, I mean, the way the Alphabet talks about it in Tanya over there, it means, in other words, I mean, obviously, I've heard that the Torah is not going to change. But it means that people who, up until now, their Shurdash and Hashama is from Chesed, and therefore they're going to be born as Kohenim, now, the Alphabet of they're going to be born in, as Levi'im, and vice versa. And vice versa, so therefore people who have neshamas that are appropriate for the Levi'im will be born in the families of Kohenim, and they will be the ones who do the Avodah. So Korach is trying to like bring that about, but the problem is, yeah, timing. Timing is everything. Okay. Rav Ashi Omer Roy Litzara. Rav Ashi says that somebody who holds on to Machlokes deserves to get Tzaraas. Ksiv Hocha B'yad Moshe Loi, because the plot continues that he shouldn't be like Korach and his group, as Hashem spoke B'yad Moshe, by the hand of Moshe, Loi to him. What happened in the hand of Moshe? Hashem says to Moshe again, put your hand into your bosom, into your pocket, and he brings it out and it's covered with tzaraas. So therefore, B'yad Moshe Loi means that the punishment is going to be the same one that was shown through Moshe's hand. And in fact, we find much later, Taka, we find that when Uzziyahu, Melech Yehuda, tried to argue against the Kohen, he tried to take for himself the privilege of being a Tzaraas, where he was a king, from Malchus Beis Dovid, he's not a Kohen, then he was punished, Taka, with Tzaraas. Rav Yosef says, in this connection, anybody who argues against Malchus Beis Dovid, Roy Lakishay Nachash, deserves to be bitten by a snake. How do we know this? Somebody tries to fight against Malchus Beis Dovid to try and depose them, to try and change it or whatever. Yeah. Like Achitofel, like Isaac Moore is going to say now, like Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu himself, by the way, is a son of David, but David had already sworn to Bathsheba, as you have through the Ram in the story, it's Bathsheba of this week, it's Bathsheba of Hayasarda, that Shlomo is going to be the next king. Therefore, Adoniyahu trying to go against that is effectively being clear, like Malchus Beis Dovid. And how do we know? Ksiv Hachal, you have a pasuk in at the beginning of Malachim. It's going to be this week's Haftarah. By Yizbach Adoniyahu Tzonu Vaku Im Evan Azichelas. It says Adoniyahu was making a party over there to celebrate his coronation, and he sees shechted over there sheep and cattle and fatted cattle. Miri is fatted. It's fatted animals. Im Evan Azichelas by the Zichelas stone. So the simple meaning, of course, is that was the name of the stone. But why do we have to mention, why is it important to know the landmark? You have a pasuk in Hazinu that refers to snakes as the venom of zoichalei ofer, the things that crawl in the dust. So therefore, in Eben Azeichelis, we have therefore a connection between the two things that he deserved to be bitten by a snake for being choylek amalchus beitzad. The chelis, meaning therefore the like literally the crawling, the creeping stone, not the creeping snake, the crawling snake that bites. More on this topic of machlokes. Amar Rav Chisda, kol choylek al rabbe kecholek al shchina. Somebody who argues against this rebbe is like he's arguing against the shchina. As the pasuk describes that Adas Korach, the pasuk describes that they were arguing against Hashem. So that's the point. In other words, that even though so the pasuk says over there, the full pasuk that Rashi brings over there is Asher Hitzu al Moshe al Aaron ba'Adas Korach ba'Hatsoisam al Hashem. They were arguing against Moshe and Aaron, the gang of Korach ba'Hatsoisam al Hashem. They're arguing against Hashem. In other words, arguing against Moshe and Aaron is tantamount to arguing against Hashem. And by the way, this comes up in halacha. It becomes a very, very complicated discussion among the acronym. What exactly the parameters of this are? I mean, for example, we have in many places in Shas where Talmud argues with the Zebe in halacha, is such a thing allowed or not? Maybe yes. Maybe this acholik al rabbi, the Rambam, for example, paskins that acholik al rabbi means specifically that the Talmud goes and sets himself up his own bris midrash. Independent of his rebbe, that's cholik, that's what we're saying over here. So what does it mean? Cholik al rabbi would mean, for example, if Talmud abandons his rebbe and doesn't accept his authority and goes and sets himself up as long as members. But let's say to argue with him in a matter of halacha, that would be allowed to pass.
They'll be only in the same city, right?
Right, well, no, if he's in the same city, then he has to ask permission, and then if he's rabbi move up and he's outside the city, he has to ask permission, yeah. But no, well, it's different because that's against the Sanhedrin. But yeah. With that said, though, the Shach talks about that maybe not. Maybe Taka, you're not allowed to argue against your Rebbe, even in a discussion in Halacha. Maybe if your Rebbe gives you permission, that's one thing. So in Shach, when we have a Talmud arguing with his Rebbe, it could be either after his Rebbe passed away, or it could be his Rebbe gave him permission. But just like that, maybe not. It becomes a little bit complicated. Okay. No, I'm done. I think primarily that's talking about Rabbi Muba, because that's what he was mostly the cause of. Amar of Chama Rav Chanina, Kala Oitim Riva Im Rabbi, somebody who fights against his Rebbe, which means more than just Cholik Al Rabbi. Cholik Al Rabbi, we just said, as Rashi says, Cholik Al Yeshivasi, that he argues with the Yeshiva like he goes and sets himself up an independent Yeshiva. He was actually fighting, like to argue against him verbally, Ka Oitim Shechina, it's like he's doing that against the Shechina. Shenema, you have a pasuk, Hema Mei Meriva Asher Rabu B'nei Yisrael Es Hashem. These are the waters of Meriva, where the Jewish people argued with Hashem, and they didn't. They argued with Moshe, where we don't have water. But it's considered like they argued against Hashem. Number three, Amar Rav Chanina bar Papa, call him Mitzrayim al Rabbi, somebody who is angry against his Rebbe, meaning, in other words, Rashi says, for example, he claims that his Rebbe is being mean to him, Shanoig l'midik rusho midis achzorius, Rashi says, is also Kila Mitzrayim al Shechina, it's like he's complaining against the Shechina, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, lo yoleinu tzlonei techem kiim al Hashem, when the Yidden are complaining early on in the desert, we don't have any food. So Moshe says, you're not complaining against us, you're complaining against Hashem. So the same. So that's the idea. And the Mitzrayim, so Marshal explains, you know, the idea, like Rashi is saying over here, that he's arguing that his Rebbe is Azoriastic. That's what was happening over there. The Jewish people are arguing, you brought us out into the desert where there's no food, and we might as well die, and we might as well have gone back to Mitzrayim or whatever. You're being Azoriastic to us. So therefore, yes, it's like arguing against it, or like arguing against the Shechina.
But they're blaming Hashem. They say, why blame us?
Well, but it's more than that. It means, in other words, that by you blaming us, by you claiming that we're actually going to stick to you, you're saying that the Eibishter is.
Right. It's a rhetorical thing. They know, obviously, that
And number four, Omer Rababo, call him a Hararacha Rabbi, somebody who thinks badly about his Rebbe, meaning, in other words, Rashi says, Machapa all of Tvarim, like he accuses him falsely, like we were saying before about Moshe with the people, with the people and their wives. It's like he's accusing Meibishter. Shenemar vaydaber on belakim of Moshe, as the pasuk says that when it came near the end of the 40 years, when they didn't have water after Miriam passed away, the people spoke. The people complained against Hashem and against Moshe. So again, the comparison over there. Okay, getting back to Korach, there's a pasuk in Kehelet that describes Osher Shomul the Baal of Lara. So you have wealth that is stored away for its owner. but it ends up being for his bad, for his evil, for his detriment. An example of that is the well for Korah, which brought him to feel proud and to start arguing against Moshe, and in the end it destroyed him.
Is it because of the money?
Yeah,
jealousy.
Well, it was jealousy, but in other words, if he hadn't been so rich, then he might not have felt himself so proud in the first place. The pasuk describes later on in Parashat Ekev, when one of Moshe's speeches where he's describing to the Jewish people what happened during the 40 years in the Midbar, and he mentions briefly the story of Korach and Dathan and Abiram. He says that the Eved is swallowed up into the ground, all the Yikum that was at their feet. What is Yikum? This refers to a person's money, to a person's possessions, which help him stand up on his feet, so that all their possessions were destroyed as well. We're all swallowed up into the ground. But Amar Rav Levi, and Rav Levi says, you want to know how rich Korach was? Masi gimul meis pirdis levanos hayu matechas shal beis gnozav shal Korach. Just the keys alone to Korach's treasure houses were the load that it would take 300 white mules to carry. 300, okay, is a guzma. It doesn't always literally mean 300, but still it means a large number. Marsha says, why dafka white donkeys? Because we find elsewhere in the Gemara, in Cholin, for example, that a white donkey, a white mule, is a very dangerous creature.
So the
Gemara talks about in Cholin, if it bites you, the bite never heals. So therefore, like, he dafka loaded the keys onto such animals in order that nobody should dare to come and take them.
A Bilam donkey also was white?
No, and that's a donkey anyway. Here's a mule. Pure is a mule. V'cholo aklidi the kilfi the gilda, and not only that, the locks and the keys were actually made out of leather rather than metal, so they wouldn't even be so heavy. Aklidi means the keys, and kulfi means the locks. Were all made out of leather so that they'd be lighter weight, so they wouldn't be quite so heavy as metal locks, and still it took 300 white mules to carry them. Yosef in Mitzrayim hid away three treasures from all the money that came flowing into Mitzrayim during the years of hunger. One was revealed to Korach, and that's how he became so tremendously rich. Another one was revealed to Antoninus ben Asvirus, who that is, we don't know, the fastest one of the Roman emperors. Yeah. The achas gnuzel of tzaddikim la'asid lover, and the third one is stored away for the tzaddikim la'asid lover.
How did Antoninus come to?
I don't know. But
why does the tzaddikim need this gold? La'asid lover. Why do they need the gold?
Yeah, I don't know. They can use it to beautify the bismuth.
It's going to come up. It's going to come down.
Yeah.
With a fire. What do they need this for?
Okay, but they have this also. Okay. Korach was not one of the ones who was swallowed up into the ground. He was also not one of the... Now, we know, in Parashat Korach, you have over there the ones who were swallowed up into the ground. You have the ones who were offering ketoras, so who were burnt by a fire in Hashemayim. Korach was neither group. He was not one of the ones swallowed up into the ground. He was also not one of the ones burnt. So what happened to him? He died. Afterwards, the pasuk says, the next day, the Jewish people come complaining to Moshe, after Hamitem Atam Hashem, you've caused Jews to die, and a Magepa breaks out, and 14,000 and some people die. Korach was one of those people.
How
do we know from the pasukim? First of all, it says that that the ground swallowed up all the people that were with Korach, implying not Korach himself. We know he wasn't one of the burnt ones. Because the pasuk says when the fire consumed the 250 people, v'loy Korach, but not Korach, because it says that Korach had the 250 people with him. Now, why takanah? The poshim say because according to this opinion, anyway, we're going to have a different opinion in a brisa. But according to Rav Yechon, and the vote is, after all, Korach had a certain mila we talked about before. He only got into this because he saw Baruch HaKodesh that he's going to have a descendant Shmuel and the other great tzaddikim who are going to descend from him, and therefore he was misled into thinking that he's going to be the chosen one of Hashem. And so therefore he didn't deserve to be in either of those groups who are swallowed up, who are burnt up. Afterwards he died in a magefa.
And he was so good, the Rishon gave him that.
But according to that way of looking, beforehand he had Ruach HaKodesh. Oh. But according to that, in other words, the point is, in a way, he's not as bad as the people who followed him, because he got into it for seemingly a good reason. He thought that really, given who is going to be his descendant, especially Shmuel, that he's Taka Baal Maila. Everybody else who followed him are Baal Machloikas, so they deserve to be swallowed up or burned as a
Kachin. Did it for Shmuel, or did it for his own?
Rashi says on the pasuk over there that he saw that Shmuel, the 24 Mishmaris of Levim, are going to descend from him, and therefore he figured that I must be the chosen one of Hashem. So in other words, therefore he has like a certain excuse, which the other ones did not have. On the other hand, a Braisa teaches us just the opposite. Kurdach minasrufin umina boy, and he was both. He was burnt and he was burnt and he was swallowed up. Which means, in other words, Rashi says, the first he's burnt, strafe as nesham of a gufkaim, internal burning, like we learned earlier in the Sefer. Then his body rolled into the hole in the ground. Minabloyim dechtivativ la'isam v'as kurdach, because you have a pasuk that says it swallowed them up and kurdach.
So how come we have the previous opinion?
Because the other pasuk says that the other pasuk implies veis kolad masher lekodach. Because if it says vativ loisam veis kodach and kodach died some other way. Minas srufim, and we know he was one of the burnt ones. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says veis yotzam eis hashem vatochel eis chamishim vasayim ish. And according to this, vekodach bahadai. According to this opinion, we would say kodach was taka one of them. So, you have two different opinions. Either he was both from the blue, and the Medrash, by the way, says, according to the second opinion, the logic why he should have been from both groups, you can't kill a person twice, why isn't one or the other punishment enough for him? Because if he was only from the one swallowed up into the ground, then the people who got burned would say, well, that's not fair. We got burned, and he got, so to speak, a lesser punishment. And if he was only burned and not swallowed up, then the people who were swallowed up would have that argument. So, therefore, both things had to happen. It's sort of like Strafe and Skila together, I guess. But again, according to Rabbi Yechanan, it's neither one, neither from the Bloyim nor from the Srufim, because after all, he was on a higher level than them. And again, especially given, again, what we were talking about, what it says in Siddus about what Kurdach was trying to accomplish, he was greater than the rest of them.
He had an excuse.
He had an excuse because of Shmuel, but also he was trying to accomplish what's going to be lost in Lava. He was just doing it prematurely.